Richie Neal, you know, I'm your biggest fan, of course, and your Catholicism, small c, how many things you can do and do well is beyond me. So I'm going to ask you about the night before Christmas.
Well, I must tell you that when I received the invitation from Keith Lockhart, the director of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, I was much in awe.
Of the Boston Pops.
Of the Boston Pops, yeah. Boston Symphony Orchestra, yeah. You name it. It's the gold standard
of
professional musicians.
It is.
And what I thought was really intriguing was that as I was rehearsing, which I did much that of the afternoon, and then spent a half hour with the conductor, Francisco Noya, he said to me, Congressman, he said, I want you to remember this. He said, you can travel the world and not everybody has heard of the New England Patriots. He said, but I can assure you, everybody has heard of the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
That's exactly
and
right.
And of course, I thought to myself, well, that's just what I needed, more jitters, as I was getting ready to perform in front of a fairly discerning audience, as we all know.
Richie, is Tanglewood in the district? Or is it?
It is.
It is in the district, of course. And I've interviewed Keith Lockhart. I don't want to tell you how many times because I'm so old. And he's getting older, too. And he's an extraordinary musician, extraordinary man. And, you know, it must have been quite a thrill because I know that every once in a while, James Taylor will do this, what you're doing, and his wife, Kim, and all the great people who, you know, who are around the Berkshires love the Berkshire Symphony as if it's their own because of Tanglewood.
Well, it is a reminder of the role that Tanglewood plays in terms of international musical attractions. And I think sometimes those of us who live in a bit east of it, while we know of it, we don't participate at Tanglewood the way that we would like to. And much of the population that frequents Tanglewood oftentimes comes from across the country. So we should be reminded of the treasure that is Tanglewood, and wherever we can augment that special contribution that they make to the arts, that we should try to be very supportive of it.
You know, I've always thought that when people come and they say, what's the vortex of the Berkshires? I always say, well, you know, it's Tanglewood and the Red Lion Inn. I love the Red Lion Inn, the Fitzpatrick family, even though, you know, Senator Jack was a Republican. A wonderful man, a wonderful
but a very
family.
Nice guy. I actually knew him from my days as mayor of Springfield, and he was a very good man.
He really was. He really was. And very much missed now. So, Richie, you know, it's been a while since we've talked to each other, but how do you explain Donald Trump?
Well, I think the phenomena is, carefully linked to economics. And I have been on this argument for a long period of time. We have now, since the end of the recession, which was the worst recession since the Great Depression, we're coming to the slow reality that there has now been wage stagnation in America for the better part of more than 12 years. And what that really means is that the American worker has not received substantial pay increases for now more than a decade, and I think that lends itself to some of the frustration that they feel. In addition, there is a very, I think, key, and I know it might sound arcane, statistic that oftentimes highlights the state of the American economy. It's called the worker participation rate. And the worker participation rate right now is about a little short of 63%. The post-war historic norm is just a bit short of 66%. And that means of the eligible workers, about 63% are in the workforce. But that additional 2.5% to 3% is huge in terms of numbers. We've had 8 to 9 million people who have left the workforce who are not likely to return, and we don't count them anymore in the statistical data of those who are actively looking for work.
Mm-hmm.
So in the aftermath of the recession, if you were 61 years old, and you were laid off, you were likely to draw down a 62-year-old benefit at Social Security, and you are not going back to work, even though the Social Security laws say that you can pay the money back if you find employment, postpone the benefit, and that increases anywhere from 6 to 7% a year as you get to 70.
Hmm.
And at the same time, understanding that there was a substantial increase in disability claims under Social Security during this period of time. And I think that what it means is that what has really now been slow growth across Europe, and across the United States, where we've had growth at about 1.9% now on average for about the last 10 or 11 years. So considering that the economy is creating about 200,000 jobs a month, we've had a couple of good months recently, but not to miss the point, there are at least 200,000 people who retire every month and leave the workforce. So the economy, it's gotten much better. You've had 70 straight months of job growth, but not to miss the point that the economy has not really ignited. And I think that accounts for much of the frustration that the Trump supporters have come to embrace. And I think that you can see that their positions on immigration, their positions on work, and their positions on tolerance oftentimes are really a very small part of the American electorate, but at this particular time, a pretty large part of the base of Donald Trump's support.
So I only have 3 minutes left in this segment, but I wanted to ask you something. How much of it is, and I think you're certainly getting there, is fear? I mean, fear.
Fear is always an important part of the American political context. I mean, the populism that George Wallace embraced was really about race.
Sure.
And it offered a very fearful projection of what the future was going to be like in America. And you had that southeastern demagoguery that plagued the nation for a long time. And there is regularly the candidate that I think that can come along that in a period of economic uncertainty, they are able to, in short order, begin a following. And you can see with some of these elections that have taken place in other parts of the country, I mean, and not that long ago, Minnesota was an example, Louisiana has been an example, where candidates come to the fore that heretofore would not have been able to pass the litmus test of the kind of regular organizing that goes into selecting candidates for office. And even though Donald Trump is polling now at about 37% of the Republican electorate, that still is only about 6% of the American electorate in November. So even though it skews the primary system, I think it's a reminder that that'll be a very different voter that shows up in November, and I think that's what has caused such great consternation amongst the Republican establishment.
And yet I only have a minute and 40 seconds now, but here's the deal. The polls are all showing that any number of Republicans could give Hillary a run for her money. Why is that? Especially since they're so conservative.
Part of it is that she's a household name. People have largely made up their minds in a lot of ways about Secretary Clinton over the course of the last 25 years. And I think that there is an opportunity for her to address those issues once the front-runner status that I anticipate will be cemented after the Iowa caucuses, and then the New Hampshire primary, and then you move to South Carolina on February 27th, and then you move to the southern states and Massachusetts in early March, Massachusetts and Colorado. So I think there's a chance for her, if she can put this primary season and selection process behind her early on, it'll be a chance for her to reintroduce herself, which is much common now in American politics, to the broader electorate once again. Well, I mean, after all this conversation, there's still only going to be about 12 states in play, and there are still probably 85% of the American people, as we speak, who do not know the candidates but have made up their minds of who they're voting for. So places like Cuyahoga County in Ohio become very important automatically because that may well determine the outcome of the state of Ohio. So that's the way the candidates are thinking of this, even though the Republicans seem to have a longer slog through their primary season than Democrats will.
Always learn something from Richie Neal, and I mean that, and I so appreciate it. Richie, thank you so much. When we come back the next time, let's talk a little bit about Springfield.
Happy to do it, Alan.